Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
And it's time now for Medical Matters, our regular health and wellbeing feature here on the programme. Joining us in studio today is Dr. David Buckley of Kerry Skincare Clinic in Tralee. And Dr. Buckley specialises in community-based dermatology, skin surgery and aesthetic medicine. And he'll be answering your questions on all aspects of skin health. If you'd like to put a question to Dr. Buckley, you can text or WhatsApp us on 083 300 3300. You can also call the show on 066 712 3666 or email us on talkabout@radiokerry.ie. Dr. Buckley, you're very welcome back to the show. I suppose it's that time of year again, and many more people are spending a lot of time outdoors for the summer months. And even though it might be a bit dull outside, what's your advice for general sun protection just to get us started?
Yeah, well, not only is it summer, but of course it's summer holidays, so people are having more time off, particularly kids and young adults, and then people take their summer holidays, and of course people travelling overseas, right? So we obviously get a lot more sun in the summer, and the sun is good for you in many ways. I mean, obviously it helps us to produce vitamin D, which keeps our bones strong. You know, it makes us feel a bit better perhaps. But I think, you know, in the last 50 or 60 years, then people were kind of getting this tan and feeling that the tan was making them feel and look better. And it probably does make your teeth look whiter, but that's because your skin is browner. But I think the fashion of tanning is going out rapidly.
Okay.
Because, like, you know, 100 years ago, if you had a tan, you were considered a peasant and nobody wanted a tan. Everybody wanted to be white. Then Coco Chanel went down to the south of France in the 40s in Paris in the 1940s and came back with a tan, and she single-handedly created this fashion of tanning. And we've all been paying the price ever since, because the incidence of skin cancer is rocketing and doubling about every 10 years. And pretty much in all the Western, all European countries and North America and Australia and New Zealand, where there's a white population. Except actually, Australia is the only country that has managed to make the incidence of skin cancer turn around and start to drop a little bit. But it came from a hugely high incidence.
Okay.
And they've been spending almost 30 years and intensive public health campaigns. And so you'd be almost arrested now if you went outdoors without a hat in Australia.
And is that how they did it? Like, how do they turn it around from such an extreme to beginning
public
to
health,
turn the tide?
Okay. Public health campaigns. Also maybe understanding that, you know, you don't need a tan, you don't need that much sun, that tan isn't necessarily a sign of affluence or something to be desired. If anything, now when I see people heavily tanned, I think they look dirty and muddy. When I see somebody with beautiful white Irish skin like yours, I think it got us really attractive, right? And in a worldwide scale, all the models now want to have white skin, they want Irish skin. This is the desired colour. So why do we want to change it, right? So because every time you tan, you damage your skin.
Okay.
And if it's just a little bit of, sun and you get a little bit of a tan occasionally in the summer, and that's fine. But if you're consistently tanning and try having a 3 or 6 month tan, or worse still, if you're using sunbeds, then that's going to come back and bite you. It may be 10, 20, 40 years later, but the incidence of skin cancer is rising because of the amount of time we're spending outdoors and the amount of sun and artificial lights that we're getting on our skin. But of course, not only is it a risk of skin cancer, it also ages the skin, which is paradoxical, because people get a tan to make them look better, but they're actually aging their skin prematurely. And when they're 50 or 60, they'll be shriveled up like prunes.
But in the old days, if people were working out in fields and stuff like that, did they take precautions that we don't take today, or is it only down to sunscreen?
Yes, of course. You know, in the old days, if you looked at a photograph of Dev or Michael Collins giving a public talk, every man, woman and child would have worn a hat without exception. Like, it was extraordinary. They were very compliant, right? People out in the fields wore big hats, wide-brimmed hats, you know. Now people walk around with these tiny little baseball hats, which is basically only protecting their forehead, you know. So when we talk about hats for sun protection, we're talking about hats to come out over the years, a broad-brimmed hat, right?
Okay.
Which protects the whole face, the ears, the back of the neck, the chin, and so forth, right? So a broad a broad-rimmed hat and a sunblock is a great way of protecting your head and neck. And that's what you want to protect against from premature aging, right? Because, you know, nobody wants to end up with wrinkles and saggy skin when they're 45 or 50, right? And this is what will happen. You know, and to be perfectly honest, people are more frightened of wrinkles than they are skin cancer, especially young people, right? And my kids, in fairness, they don't pretty much abuse the sun like we did when we were kids, you know. Okay. Young people have become far more fashion conscious and skin conscious and physique conscious. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, they know that, like, if they get too much sun, you'll get aging skin, right? They don't to worry too much about skin cancer, but they do worry about wrinkles, right? And then, of course, just on while we mentioned it, sunbeds, I think within the next 2 to 5 years, they'll be banned.
There's already, think that's going to come in?
Absolutely. They're already banned in Australia. They're banned in Brazil and a few other countries. It's crazy. It's like reckless what people are doing to their skin, and they kind of don't really understand the dangers. Okay. And of course, it's the HSE and the health service is picking up the pieces, paying for all of this sun-damaged skin and skin cancers that are rocketing, not just because of sunbeds, but sunbeds are a large part of it, right?
Okay. There was a MEP, Billy Kelleher, came out during the week, and he called on the European Commission and the national government to eliminate VAT on sun cream, and because he also spoke about the growing rates of skin cancer. Do you think that might make a difference, or do you think it's kind of something more dramatic than that needed?
Yes and no, I suppose. First of all, you can buy sunscreen in some of the cheap supermarkets for like less than a fiver, right?
Okay. So that's effective.
Yeah, it's fine, right? You factor 30 sunblock. 30s and 50s are all the same, right? 30 is considered a total sunblock. So if you get a 30, it's the same as a 50. There's almost no difference. And price-wise, they're all the same anyway, right? So we usually recommend 30s. And cheap ones, yeah. I mean, okay, some women want to use more expensive ones, particularly on their face, because maybe they need more moisturising, or they need, maybe they're a teenager and have acne, they need less oil. Mm-hmm. You know, there are specific situations where we might use more expensive sunblocks for the face. But for the body, cheap ones that you buy in your local pharmacy, in the supermarkets, if they're CE marked, which they pretty much have to be, and if it says factor 100, I wouldn't buy it, because with a CE mark, you can only marked it up to factor 50, right?
Okay.
I personally use factor 30, right? I think it's fine. And of course, you have to apply generously and frequently, right? But for me personally, I think wearing a hat is a lot easier than a sunblock, right? Because a sunblock will sweat off, it'll rub off, it'll wash off if you swim or shower. Whereas a hat, as long as you're wearing your head, you know? Now, really, you need both, right? And then as far as the body is concerned, well, I just wear long sleeves and long trousers, and then I don't have to mess around with sunblocks. Now, there are occasions, I might be out in the boat or something, that I'll put a sunblock on my arms and legs, right? But I see lots of golfers, I see lots of gardeners, fishermen, agricultural workers like farmers, and they come in and they're absolutely riddled with skin cancer because they didn't wear a hat and didn't wear proper clothing when they were younger, you know.
Okay.
So there are certain occupations that are obviously high risk, and obviously certain sports, and then people who go like to the Canaries for 3 months in the winter, they're at high risk as well, so they need to cover up even more, right? So prevention is better than cure.
Speaking of prevention and cure, we have a lot of specific messages coming in to talk to you. So I might just start reading them out if that's all right with you. So one texter says to tell Dr. Buckley that in Sydney, the higher the factor sun cream, the cheaper it is. The opposite to here. I'm not sure if you are aware of that. And then a person said, do people of colour get skin cancer?
All right, the first question is, that's a good marketing idea. I've never heard of that, but that's pretty good. I think that'd be more effective than taking the VAT off, right? So encouraging people to go up to at least 50. You know, you put on a factor 2 or 4. That means, you know, you can only stay out twice as long as, you know, but you can still burn in half an hour, an hour if you have very fair skin, if you wear a factor 4, right? Whereas if you wear a factor 30, you know, we can stay out 30 times longer, right? So yes, I think that's a good idea. The second question was again?
Do people of colour get...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're genetically protected, so they get an awful lot less skin cancer. But it is possible. Like, for instance, Bob Marley, who has dark skinned, he died of a melanoma.
Oh, really? Okay.
On the sole of his foot, which is an unusual place. But people with Afro-Caribbean skin tend to get melanomas on their hands and feet, whereas people with Caucasian skin don't, right? So they're not immune, but it's hugely less prevalent there because they are genetically modified to exist in a very hot climate.
Okay. The next caller is a texter, actually, from Tralee in her 60s. She says, please ask Dr. Buckley what SPF cream he would recommend for very sensitive skin. I can't find one that suits my skin.
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, I did say that the ordinary stuff that you buy in the pharmacies in the supermarkets, a factor 30 is a good sunblock for pretty much anybody who wants to prevent wrinkles and also avoid skin cancer, right? But there are certain situations where the chemicals that are in these chemical sunblocks can be irritating or aggravate some problems, like for instance, if you have acne or eczema or sensitive skin, then you might want to go for a pure mineral sunblock, right? So this is a sunblock that doesn't have the, like the 10 chemicals that the ordinary sunblock has. It's got two minerals, zinc and titanium, and these are very stable compounds. They're not chemicals, they're minerals, and they block out the sun extremely effectively. They're equivalent to factor 30, but they don't tend to sting or burn if they get into your eyes. They don't aggravate eczema, and they can not, they don't tend to make acne worse, right? Which some sunblocks do. They're more expensive, of course, and it's harder to get a pure mineral sunblock.
And do you need a prescription for them, or you can just ask your pharmacist?
Yeah, yeah, but they're hard to get in Ireland.
Okay.
And they tend to be more expensive. So we might reserve those for the face and for people who have sensitivities to sunblocks, because it does happen. They have to use hats and clothing and then stay in the shade and maybe go out for their walks late in the evening or go to the garden early in the morning, but stay out of the midday sun, you know. So there are other ways of protecting your skin. It's not just all about sunblock.
Okay.
Hats and clothing and seeking shade is equally important.
Now, we have another text in. It says, hi, I want to ask Dr. Buckley to for post-Roaccutane skincare advice. I'm worried I'm going to have to buy so many expensive products to keep my skin as it is. It looks really clear after Roaccutane. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. After Roaccutane treatment, and I don't want it to regress.
Okay, that's a really good question. We're moving on to it. This is acne treatment. So people with very bad acne who've failed to respond to any other treatments, whether it be topical or oral therapies, the standard stuff that their GP might give them for 3 or 6 months. If it's not responding, or if it does respond but relapses, or if it's very, very severe acne where they get lumps and cysts and scars, then they'll go on oral isotretinoin, which is called Roaccutane. That's the trade name, right? So this is a vitamin A derivative, and it's a fantastically effective drug for bad acne. And it's not used for standard acne, no, it's for bad acne that fails to respond to everything else. And people take it for an average of about 6 months. You cannot become pregnant on this drug, so it's really, really important that women have to have effective contraception and have a pregnancy test every single month while they're on it and before they start it and just after finishing it. And then we do blood tests maybe every month or two as well to make sure, but it's actually a very safe drug. Apart from the risk of pregnancy, it's very rare to have any serious side effects from it. It causes dry lips and your skin gets very dry while you're on it, but that all settles down within a month of stopping it, right? Now, this young lady, I presume it's a lady, didn't say, did it?
I didn't say
it. Okay, it could be a man or lady. But what happens here is classic, right? This person, we'll call this person, right, had very bad acne. They went on Roaccutane, now they have no acne. You can't believe the relief that this lady or person has had, right? Mm. And so they live in fear then that this acne will come back again because they can't cope with it. Now they've had clear skin, right? Mm-hmm. The joy of that, it's enormously rewarding as a doctor to treat these patients because they can, if you cure them of cancer, they wouldn't be as grateful, right? But they really are very worried for the first year perhaps after that, oh, if it comes back and if it goes bad again, and you can't blame them, right? Mm-hmm. So even one pimple, they'll go into a tailspin and they get very nervous. But the reality is that 3 out of 4 people who've completed the course of Roaccutane and have cleared their acne will never, ever, ever get their acne back again. And they're just ordinary skincare. Not to over-moisturise, that's the only thing, but ordinary skincare, just an ordinary sunblock, that's all they need, right? And just relax and enjoy their happy skin, right? If they get a bad relapse, they just take more Roaccutane. Simple, okay. Right? But I can assure this lady or man that they're cured, chances are it'll never come back again. Now, that's not to say that she mightn't get a pimple at period time, but that's not acne. That's any woman can get a pimple at period times, or a man might get a few spots at exam time, right? Mm-hmm. But like, she's not going to get a bad acne back again. And God forbid, even if she did, just take more Roaccutane.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
And you're very welcome back. And as you know, Dr. David Buckley of the Kerry Skin Clinic in Tralee is in studio. We have more of your texts to get to. So we'll start off with one listener has a reoccurring skin condition on the side of their nose. It's like a pimple. Her doctor prescribed the cream Solaris. The pimple goes away after using the cream for a little while, but then it returns. She has used the cream 3 or 4 times, but the pimple keeps returning. The caller wonders if it's safe to continue doing this, or would the skin specialist recommend surgically removing the spot?
That's a really good question, and it kind of leads on to the theme today. It was about sun and protecting from the sun and preventing aging, but of course also preventing skin cancer. I think she said she was 80, did she?
No, that was a different caller.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll assume that she's obviously a senior lady anyway, right? So if somebody, well, she did tell us this, all kinds of alarm bells ring in my head here, because this is a spot, it's on the head and neck where we get most skin cancers. It's on the nose, which is even higher incidence. I presume she's over 60, but even if she wasn't, even over 45 now would, you know, and it just won't heal up, right? So if anything that's new on the skin that won't heal, or anything that's kind of changing, like getting sore and healing, but then coming back on the same spot again, or something that looks different, like she only has it on one side of her nose, she hasn't got pimples all over her face, mm-hmm. or something that's sore, right? Tender, sore, or tiny speck of blood. All of these are warning signs for skin cancer. So we say new, changing, different, sore, or new cancers do show is the acronym, right? So it's new, I think, but she said it's changing because it's coming and going. It looks different. She said he only has one. And she didn't say it was sore, but she didn't say there was a speck of blood. But there doesn't have to be, right? Mm-hmm. Even two of those four warning signs is enough for her now to be worried that this is either a precancer or a skin cancer, right? Probably not life-threatening. It's probably not a melanoma because they usually arise out of moles and freckles, right? But it could be what we call a non-melanoma skin cancer. And on your nose, that's kind of a problem because, you know, cutting things out of your nose is very difficult because you have so little spare flesh. If you take it out of the cheek or the neck, you have so much spare flesh, you can cut it out and not worry about scars and so forth. So yes, but rather than cut it out, she probably needs to see a skin specialist if her GP has tried their best, in fairness. And we would examine it with a microscope called a dermatoscope, a special microscope that you can see right into the skin, and that will tell us whether it's just precancer, in which case we could freeze it off with a cold liquid, or is it possibly a skin cancer, in which case we would take a biopsy. So a biopsy means you put in local anaesthetic, like the dentist numbs the tooth, and we take out a small sample, mm-hmm. maybe 2 or maybe 3 millimetres. This thing might be 6 or 10 millimetres, right? Take out a little sample, 3 millimetres, one stitch, that's very, very easy, and with that information then we know exactly what's going on, and then we can plan the treatment accordingly. And skin cancers and precancers on the nose, as I said, they can be frozen off, they can be cut off. We even have special creams, not solar rays, right, but special powerful creams that can get rid of some skin cancers. But it would depend on the type and the depth and the extent and the size and the location and so forth. So yes, I think now it's maybe time for her to move on a little bit.
Okay, so no need to panic, but do act.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Well, she wouldn't want to be waiting 9 months or 12 months because on the nose, like on the cheek, you can imagine, like, but on the nose, it's a very critical area. And you know, I don't want to scare her, but people that ended up with serious damage lose their nose from these things, you know.
Okay.
So she doesn't have to panic like today, but like maybe if she got it seen within the next 6 or 12 weeks, that would be really nice, right?
Okay.
If that was possible.
Another caller, a female caller, has had a number of melanoma spots removed over the past 8 years, but asks if anyone in Kerry does skin mapping so she could notice any changes before having to go through the surgery. Most of her back has brown spots and she lives alone, so no one can check.
She didn't give her age, no?
She didn't, no. Okay.
So I'm not sure if this lady is kind of exactly what she said, which is a bit unusual. She said multiple melanomas, or was it multiple moles? She said melanomas.
She said a number of melanoma spots.
Because yeah, if you've had more than two melanomas, you need to have a skin check once a year by a skin specialist with these handheld microscopes called dermatoscopes, right? And if she's had maybe more than three or more melanomas, now maybe she's mixing it up. Maybe she had what we call non-melanoma skin cancers. But it's very, very unusual to have 3 melanomas. That's exceptionally rare, right? But if she did, she'd be one of those exceptional people who might need, obviously, again, to have a checkup. Even one melanoma, you have a checkup every year for the rest of your life, right? If you've had 2 or 3, yeah, perhaps total body photography, but it's not done in Kerry. You'd have to go to Cork or Dublin for that, right? Where they photograph the whole body from head to toe and then repeat those photographs in 6 or 12 months to see if there's changes. But she said about her back, you can easily examine your own back. You just need 2 mirrors. Right? Okay. A hand mirror and a wall mirror. And you stand with your back to the wall mirror and you look into the hand mirror and you can see your own back. So, like, there's no problem seeing your back, right? You can see every square inch of your body if you have 2 mirrors, right? And she should get used to examining her own skin every month. And that's almost as good as the small mapping stuff, right? Unless she's had 3 melanomas, which I find it hard to believe, right? For the average person, yes, I suppose in America they say we should all adults should be checking their skin once a month. That's probably a bit excessive, but if you've had a skin cancer, definitely yes, okay. And then see a skin specialist once a year.
Okay, another Trilly listener has called to say he had surgery on an ingrown toenail about 7 months ago. It's a light. It's a I can't really read this. There's a light bit of pain every now and again, but that doesn't, does that mean it didn't work? And it's not as bad as the pain he had before, and the pain only happens sometimes now. He asks, if it didn't work then, should could the surgery be done again?
Yeah, I suppose we do a lot of skin, nail surgery in the Kerry Skin Clinic, as do they do in lots of GP practices now can provide us and hospital practices. And generally after 6 months, you should be pain free. So if there is some residual pain, albeit less severe than before, there's probably still some nail left behind. Now, maybe the chiropodist might be able to sort this out for him, right? Mm-hmm. But if it was ongoing, getting worse, if it was starting to get red and inflamed, if he needed to take an oral antibiotic or had to go back to the chiropodist on a number of occasions to get relief, then he needs the surgery repeated again. And in our clinic, when we've done audited and scientific studies on this, we've shown that about 10% of our patients need to come back and have the surgery repeated. In some places, that's a lot higher, the recurrence rate, you know. So there's no such thing as a 100% guarantee of anything in medicine, and particularly in surgery. So having a 90% cure rate, we consider that really, really good. But there's always 1 in 10 that'll have to come back and repeat the whole thing all over again.
Okay. There's a call or a caller in here. Now, they don't name the practice but or the business, but the mother phoned in to say that her 15-year-old daughter had used a tanning bed 4 times before she owned up to it. Her mother called in to complain to the unit and that they did not refuse a 15-year-old, and she was told that there's no law for any age group not to be allowed 10, but that they don't allow children to use their services and that they also only take cash. So that's something a bit suspect happening there, perhaps.
Yes, I'm not entirely up to the legislation. I could be corrected on this, but first of all, 15-year-old is a child.
Yes.
Right? Okay, so that's the first thing, right? And secondly, to the best of my knowledge, you have to be over 18 to use sunbeds, right? And you have to have proof of ID. Of course, kids have fake ID, right? So you know, they could claim that as a defence, right? But it is completely negligent and very dangerous, right? And I think this mother was right. And I think she should report it to, I'm not quite sure where you would report it to, go down to the HSE offices and ask them where you, or citizens' advice, right? Mm-hmm. And ask them where you report this, because this is definitely not safe, right? And now 4 sessions of a sunbed for a 15-year-old, you know, that's not going to be a significant risk. If it was 40 sessions or if she was burning from the sunbed, and you'd rather your child not have this done. And I think she was exactly right, right? And then they're accepting cash and not check. Yeah, it's all very dodgy to me, right? Yeah. Now, we don't name and shame, but they'll be out of business in the next 2 to 5 years anyway. But yes, I think she should definitely report it to some the appropriate authorities, not the guards, but the citizens' advice will tell her where to report it to.
Okay. Another text. Hi, Dr. Buckley. I have a very fair redheaded 8-year-old. A mole has popped up on her hairline. Should I get this checked out? As I realise she is very young. I did bring another mole on her leg to the attention of her GP, and they said to watch and wait.
Okay, so if I get a phone call and you know about an adult with a mole that's kind of new or changing or whatever, I'll get them in straight away. If I get the same phone call about a child, I'll say, I don't need to see them, or maybe bring them in 6 months. I've never ever seen a melanoma or a skin cancer in a child. It's so rare, even in a worldwide scale. So, you know, almost certainly. And in the scalp, of course, it's protected by the hair anyway. And she's redheaded, so she's going to get moles, right? You can get new moles right up to the age of 40, right? So if you get a child gets a new mole and it grows to maybe, you know, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 millimetres, and then it stops, well, that's natural, that's normal. We're not born with our moles, we developed them in the first 40 years of our life. But if you get a new mole after the age of 40, that's very unusual. And then we'd be worried, could that mole be a melanoma? So a new mole over the age of 40 is a worry. A new mole in a child is natural. It's normal, right? So unless there was something very unusual about it, I wouldn't be panicking over this. Perhaps she probably doesn't even need to get it checked. And we've had kids who've lost all their hair from chemotherapy or some rare medical conditions. And you'd be surprised how many moles they have in their scalp, but you can't see them because the hair is there, you know. Big moles sometimes, right? Nobody knew they were there until the child lost their hair. Mostly after chemo, the child gets their hair back again, right? So yeah, children, it's so rare, so exceptionally rare for a child to get a melanoma that we almost never worry about it.
Okay.
There are 1 or 2 exceptions, but by and large, generally no.
Okay, so there's another question in here and it kind of relates to the previous one. A question for the doctor. I had a mole removed from my neck just below my ear about 20 years ago. Now it has grown back. What would the doctor recommend from a 63-year-old lady?
I presume this wasn't skin cancer. She would have probably mentioned
she
that.
She probably so just would have, yeah.
A mole removed from her neck, yeah. Maybe that's another mole beside the old mole. Maybe it was shaved off. Sometimes we shave off moles to make them look better because it's just cosmetic. You know, there's lots of moles that, you know, stick out of your neck and there's hair sticking out of it, like Nanny McPhee and so forth. And we'll often shave those off to make them look good. And actually, within 5 minutes, you can make them look almost disappear, right? And it's very simple. It's much easier than going to the dentist, a bit of local anaesthetic, just shave it off. But they can grow back after 10 or 20 years because you've just shaved them. You've left the roots behind because you're not dealing with cancer here, right? It's cosmetic. So she just shaves it again. But it's highly unlikely, unless that first biopsy was cancerous, which she didn't say. So I'm assuming this is just a cosmetic issue. So no, I wouldn't be worried about that.
Okay. So we'll take one or two more before we wrap up. Just this person says, I get a red rash on the side of my neck and chest in the sun. Not a risen rash I get in the winter, but if I'm hot, anxious or in the sun, even when I'm wearing sun cream. I have done a lot of research as to what it could be. The search seems to be showing I'll have to spell this POIK.
Polymorphic light eruption.
POIKILODERMA.
Poikiloderma. Yes, okay. She said it's on the side of her neck, right?
And chest, yeah.
And chest, that's not poikiloderma, I wouldn't think, right? So poikiloderma, it's the proper name is poikiloderma or Cravat. Cravat was a dermatologist in the 18th, 19th century. And that's in women in their, usually in their 50s, where they get this redness and broken veins on both sides of the neck. But in the middle, kind of where the Adam's apple is, it's clear, right? And that's kind of a photosensitive rash. It may be that they're spraying perfume there and then the sun is causing this rash, but it's there all year round. So I don't think that's what she's describing, right? But what she probably may have is what we call polymorphic light eruption. It's prickly heat. It's okay. A heat rash, right? So it's worse in the summer. So this is very common in women, right? Often in their kind of, maybe in their 30s, 40s, 50s, that the sun comes out in the summer, the first bit of sun, and then they get this like eczema, prickly heat type rash, right? Mm-hmm. It's quite uncomfortable and can be unsightly, right? And so often on the places that, not necessarily on the face, but often on the neck and the arms, right? Places that weren't exposed for the winter now become exposed in the summer because we all start to wear short sleeves and so forth and low necks and plunging necklines and whatever. And then it's actually quite uncomfortable, and it might take a week to settle down after the first burst of sunshine, and then the next burst it might come out again, right? So again, like all kind of allergies, you avoid the thing that you're allergic to. This is a sun allergy, so appropriate clothing, high collars, long sleeves, maybe a better sunblock, like a mineral sunblock, right? But it sounds like polymorphic light eruption.
Okay.
There are sometimes topical steroids will help. Sometimes people would take oral steroids if they're going on holidays to Spain or someplace really hot. They might take a course of oral steroids before they go. But generally, you just kind of try and prevent it. But sunblocks, but she can forget about tanning. Okay. Our sunbeds as well. That's not going to work.
Now, I have to apologise to the listeners who I didn't get to, but I'll put them on the list and I'm sure Deirdre will get to them the next time you're in. Thank you very much, Dr. Buckley, for joining us.